Welcome back. We have the pleasure of the company of another great investigative and national security reporter. He is Bill Gertz. He is the prize-winning author of the Inside the Ring column in the Washington Times. He's also the senior editor of yet another very important online resource, the Washington Free Beacon. The author of seven, count them, seven best-selling books, including the most recent, I, War, War and Peace in the Information Age. Bill, it is so good to have you with us. You've been reporting up a storm on things involving our interest in Asia, both the Pacific, China, and not least now in space as well. I'm anxious to talk with you about all of them. Welcome back.
Hi, Frank. Always great to be on the show.
Well, let's take note of the fact that there is going to be a new commander of the U.S. Pacific Command heading out into what are indisputably troubled waters these days. We'll talk a little bit about what's on his portfolio, but what do we know about Admiral Scott Swift, who will be replacing Harry Harris in that job?
Yeah, this is the lead item in my weekly Inside the Ring column in the Washington Times this week, and it looks at basically a done deal. And the deal was that Admiral Harris, the current PACOM commander, was offered a second three-year term at Camp Smith in Honolulu and turned it down. And instead, he is going to be named as the U.S. ambassador to Australia as part of a strategy to try to get some really good people in ambassadorial slots, people who understand the China threat and are willing to help the allies to deal with it. That said, the Pacific Fleet commander, that is Admiral Scott Swift, has got the nod. And when the transition will take place, it will depend on Harris getting the nod for the ambassadorship. If that happens, then we could see a speed up of Swift coming in. He's a good guy. The people who worked for him tell me that he's well respected as both a thinker and a warrior. And one of the things that he was able to do was to break the international dateline divide within the Navy. That was the line that kept the continental-based naval forces from working in the Western Pacific. And he was able to get those Eastern forces to be part of the growing military presence in the Pacific, specifically because of the growing Chinese threat.
Yeah. Interesting and important development there. But Bill, you know, you followed these guys so closely for so long. I don't know whether it's something in the water in Honolulu where these bases are, or whether it's the nature of the promotion system and the political interventions in it. But it certainly seems as though we've had a string of commanders in that position, SINCPAC, they used to call it, and now the commander of the Pacific Command, who have, well, I don't know whether they've gone native or are panda huggers, as some have said, but they certainly have been more inclined to accommodate the Chinese than to resist them. If that's a fair characterization, where would you expect Admiral Swift to come down?
Definitely more on the side of Admiral Harris, who had a much tougher posture towards China. He was the one that came out and called Chinese aggression, and let's be honest, that's what it is, the Great Wall of Sand. I think that we'll see Admiral Swift in that same mold. Yeah, it's true that the Navy in particular has been heavily politicized on China, and this has developed, especially under the Obama administration, where this notion of building trust through military exchanges became the centerpiece of the policy there and created all kinds of politicization. I can remember Admiral Locklear saying that it wasn't China or North Korea that was the biggest threat in the Pacific. It was climate change.
Yeah, global warming. I remember that too. Hey, Bill, you've pointed out that in some measure, this is a function of a very much a one-way to military relationship, and we need no more of that for sure. Bill, we've got to run out of time before we run out of topics with you. I'd like to do sort of a lightning round on a couple of other stories you've been reporting on that all have something to do with China. Chinese trucks in North Korea. This is really an ongoing story, but what's the latest on it?
Yeah, this is new information that was one of the regular panel of experts reports out of the United Nations. Under one of the Security Council resolutions, there's a panel of experts that looks at the North Korean missile and sanctions issues. And this one was pretty mind-blowing in a lot of sense, especially when you consider it was produced by a UN panel of experts that included a Chinese national. And it basically revealed that additional information about Chinese military support to the missile program of North Korea, in this case, some trucks by a company called Sinotruk that were sold and were just photographed in April carrying the brand new submarine-launched KN-11 submarine-launched ballistic missile. Of course, the Chinese dissembled and lied about it to the UN. They said that, well, actually, there's no prohibition on selling these trucks, when in fact there is. They were converted into military trucks, sold as civilian trucks, converted into military trucks. And that's, again, the Chinese excuse. They need to be sanctioned. Trump administration has not sanctioned him for an even more egregious transfer, which was the mobile transporter erector launchers, which are now used for the long-range missiles, the nuclear missiles.
The one pointed at us. These are not friends, it's fair to say, Bill Gertz, and they're not people that we can rely upon to curb the dangerous appetite and threats posed by these North Korean proxies, are they? Let me ask you, Bill, quickly about space. We had Steve Lambakis of the National Institute for Public Policy on the program earlier this week, did a terrific job talking about the challenges in space. It's the subject of a new report that you've highlighted for us and others. You've been particularly keen on what they found in that NIPP study about what you call a great leap forward in terms of Chinese military space activities, as well as some that may be dual use. Talk about that, Bill.
Sure. This was a really eye-opening report and by the National Institute for Public Policy. And while it identified other foreign space threats, clearly the Chinese are making major strides in developing this asymmetric strategic warfare capability. In a sense, the blinding of satellites with lasers, four types of direct ascent anti-satellite missiles. And in fact, the report highlights the use of nuclear blasts in space to create electromagnetic or EMP pulse attacks against satellites. All this is designed as asymmetric warfare in the opening stages of any future conflict with the United States, and it really highlights the key vulnerability.
Bill, you have done such great work on this, including, among other things, highlighting the two Chinese People's Liberation Army colonels who wrote about unrestricted warfare back in the day when they were mostly using non-kinetic means to threaten us. These are now combining with a whole array, as you say, of kinetic ones in space and terrestrial as well. Hey, Bill, quickly, lastly, when we spoke last week, you mentioned to me that there was an interesting story involving this Chinese billionaire who has sought refuge in our country, Guo Wengui. Would you tell us what is the story there?
Yeah, this is a major story of a Chinese billionaire who has broken with the regime and has begun revealing secrets about high-level corruption and corruption at the highest levels, literally within the seven-member standing committee of the Politburo. He's been under pressure from the Chinese to have him return to China. They've trumped up charges against him. He's living in New York and battling back. I think he's has the potential to be a Alexander Solzhenitsyn-like figure for the Chinese in really pressing for reform. So I'm very optimistic if the pro-China factions within government here don't turn him back over. He has a real potential to make some positive changes in the Chinese political system.
If the Chinese don't kill him, which is another distinct possibility as well, even in this country, I'm afraid. Bill Gertz, we have to leave it at that for the moment. We appreciate tremendously, as always, your visits with us, but as well, your reporting and your terrific books, including most recently, I War, War and Peace in the Information Age. Bill, Thanks so much. Come back to us again soon. Have a great weekend. Next up, we will speak with Jessica Vaughn. We'll talk with her about the latest in the DACA drama. That and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.